I didn't kill Dan when I found him. I only kicked him in the face. You kicked him in the face, I say, trying to dig through the mess in my head. He raises a brow.
Yeah. Did Zed tell you that?
I don't know. I remember hearing the words, I just can't remember who said them. I'm Hardin, not Zed, Hardin said. His voice in my mind feels so real. You were here, weren't you? Last night? I step toward him. He backs into the wall. You were. I remember it. You said you were going to drink, and you didn't.
I didn't think you remembered,
Hardin mutters. Why wouldn't you just tell me? My head aches while I struggle to separate drug-induced dreaming from reality.
I don't know. I was going to, but then everything got so familiar and you were smiling and I didn't want to ruin it.
He shrugs one shoulder, and his eyes focus on the large painting of the Golden Gates of Heaven on my mother's wall. How would you telling me that you drove me home ruin it?
I didn't drive you home. Zed did.
I remembered that earlier, sort of. This is so frustrating. So you came after? What was I doing? I want Hardin to help me put together the sequence of events. I can't seem to do it on my own.
You were lying on the couch. You could barely speak.
Oh.
You were calling out for him.
He adds quietly, venom laced through his deep voice. For who?
Zed.
His answer is simple, but I can feel the emotion behind it. No, I wasn't. That doesn't make sense. This is so frustrating. I sift through the mental mud and finally find a lump of sense. Hardin speaking about Dan, Hardin asking me if I can hear him, me asking him about Zed. I wanted to know about him, if you had hurt him, I think. The memory is fuzzy, but it's there.
You said his name more than once. It's okay. You were so out of it.
His eyes drop to the carpet and stay there.
I didn't expect you to want me anyway.
I didn't want him. I may not remember much, but I was afraid. I know myself enough to know that I would only call for you, I admit without thinking. Why did I just say that? Hardin and I broke up, again. This is our second actual breakup, but it feels like there have been so many more. Maybe because this time I haven't jumped into his arms at the slightest sign of affection from him. This time I left the house and the gifts from Hardin. This time I'm leaving for Seattle in less than 24 hours.
Come here,
he says, holding his arms open. I can't. I take a page from his book and run my fingers over my hair.
Yes, you can.
Whenever Hardin is around me, despite the situation, the familiarity of him always seeps into every fiber of my being. We either scream at each other or we smile and tease. There's never any distance, no middle ground between us. It's such a natural thing for me now, an instinct, really, to let myself find comfort in his arms, laugh at his stale attitude, and ignore the issues that caused us to be in whatever terrible situation that we're in at the time. We aren't together anymore, I say quietly, more to remind myself.
I know.
I can't pretend that we are. I pull my bottom lip between my teeth and try not to notice the way his eyes dull at the reminder of our status.
I'm not asking you to do that. All I'm asking is for you to come here.
His arms are still open, still long and inviting, calling for me, pulling me closer and closer. And if I do, we'll only fall back into repeating the cycle that we both decided to end.
Tessa.
Hardin, please. I back away. This living room is much too small for me to avoid him, and my self-control is faltering.
Fine.
He finally sighs, and his hands tug at his hair, his usual sign of frustration. We need this. You know that we do. We have to spend some time apart.
Some time apart?
He looks wounded, pissed off, and I'm a little afraid of what will come out of his mouth next. I don't want a fight with him, and today isn't the day for him to try to start one. Yes, some time alone. We can't get along, and everything seems to always be working against us. You said yourself the other day that you were sick of it. You kicked me out of the apartment. I cross my arms in front of my chest.
Tessa, you can't be fucking...
He looks into my eyes and stops mid-sentence.
How much time?
What?
How much time apart?
I didn't expect him to agree. I don't know.
A week? A month?
He pushes for specifics. I don't know, Hardin. We both need to get ourselves to a better place.
You're my better place, Tess.
His words swarm through my chest, and I force my eyes to move from his face before I lose whatever resistance I have left. You're mine, too. You know you are. But you're so angry, and I'm always on edge with you. You have to do something about your anger, and I need time to myself.
So this is my fault again?
He asks. No, it's me too. I'm too dependent on you. I need to be more independent.
Since when does any of this matter?
The tone of his voice tells me that he hasn't ever considered my dependency on him a problem. Since we had that massive blow-up at the apartment a few nights ago. Actually, it started a while ago. Seattle and the argument the other night were just the icing on the cake. When I finally gather the courage to look up at Hardin, I see that his expression has changed.
Okay, I get it,
he says.
I'm sorry. I know I fuck up a lot. We've already beaten the Seattle thing into the ground, and maybe it's time that I start listening to you more.
He reaches for my hand, and I let him take it, momentarily baffled by his newfound agreeability.
I'll give you some space, okay? You've dealt with enough shit in the past 24 hours alone. I don't want to be another problem. For once.
Thank you, I respond simply.
Can you let me know when you get to Seattle? And get some food in your stomach and rest, please?
His green eyes are soft, warm, and comforting. And I want to ask him to stay, but I know it's not a good idea. I will. Thank you. Really.
You don't have to thank me.
His hands push into the tight pockets of his black jeans, and his eyes measure my face.
I'll tell Landon you said hello,
he says, and walks out the door. I can't help but smile at the way he lingers by Landon's car, staring at my mother's house for a long beat before getting into the passenger seat. Chapter 68, Tessa. The moment that Landon's car is out of sight, the emptiness weighs heavy on my chest, and I step back from the entryway, letting the door close. Noah is leaning against the threshold between the living room and kitchen.
Is he gone?
He asks gently. Yeah, he's gone. My voice is distant, unfamiliar even to myself.
I didn't know you guys weren't together.
We're just trying to figure everything out.
Can you tell me one thing before you change the subject?
His eyes scan my face.
I know that look. You're about to find a reason to.
Even after the months we've been apart, Noah still reads me so well. What do you want to know? I ask. His blue eyes stare into mine. He holds my gaze for a long time, a bravely long time.
If you could go back, would you, Tessa? I heard you say you want to erase the last 6 months. But if you could, would you, really?
Would I? I sit down on the couch to ponder his question. Would I take it all back? Erase everything that's happened to me in the last 6 months? The bet? The endless fights with Hardin? The downward spiral of my relationship with my mother? Steph's betrayal? All the humiliation? Everything? Yes. In a heartbeat. Hardin's hand on mine. The way his inked arms wrapped around me, pulling me to his chest. The way he sometimes laughed so hard that his eyes would pinch closed and the sound would fill my ears, my heart, and the entire apartment with such a rare happiness that I felt more alive than I'd ever felt before. No, I wouldn't. I couldn't, I say, changing my answer. Noah shakes his head.
Which is it?
He chuckles and sits on the recliner across from the couch.
I've never known you to be so indecisive.
I shake my head firmly. I wouldn't erase it.
You're sure? It's been a bad year for you, and I don't even know the half of it.
I'm sure. I nod a couple of times, then take a seat on the edge of the couch. I would do some things differently, though, with you. Noah gives me a slight smile.
Yeah, me too.
He quietly agrees.
Teresa!
A hand grasps my shoulder and shakes me.
Teresa, wake up.
I'm up, I groan, and open my eyes. The living room. I'm in my mother's living room. I kick a blanket off my legs. a blanket Noah covered me with when I lay down after we talked a bit more and then started to watch some TV together, just like old times. I wriggle out of my mother's grip. What time is it?
9 p.m. I was going to wake you up earlier.
She purses her lips. It must have been driving her insane to let me sleep the day away. Oddly, the thought amuses me. Sorry, I don't even remember falling asleep. I stretch my arms and stand to my feet. Did Noah leave? I peer into the kitchen and I don't see him.
Yes. Mrs. Porter really wanted to see you, but I told her it wasn't a good time, she says and goes into the kitchen.
I follow her, smelling something cooking. Thank you. I do wish I'd said a proper goodbye to Noah, especially because I know I'll see him again. My mother goes to the stove and says over her shoulder,
Hardin brought your car, I see.
Disapproval coloring her voice. A moment later, she turns from the stove and hands me a plate of lettuce and grilled tomatoes. I haven't missed her idea of a good meal, but I take the plate from her hand anyway. Why didn't you tell me that Hardin came here that night? I remember it now. She shrugs.
He asked me not to.
Taking a seat at the table, I poke at the meal tentatively. Since when do you care what he wants? I challenge, nervous about her reaction.
I don't, she says, and prepares her own plate. I didn't mention it because it's in your best interest not to remember.
My fork slips from my fingers and hits the plate with a sharp clink. Keeping things from me isn't in my best interest, I say. I'm doing my best to keep my voice cool and calm. I really am. To emphasize this, I dab the corners of my mouth with a perfectly folded napkin.
Teresa, do not take your frustrations out on me, my mother says, joining me at the table. Whatever that man has done to make you this way is your own fault, not mine.
The moment her red lips pull into a confident smirk, I stand from the table, throw my napkin onto the plate, and storm out of the room.
Where are you going, young lady? She calls.
To bed. I have to get up at 4 a.m, and I have a long drive ahead of me. I yell down the hallway and close the door to my bedroom. I take a seat on my childhood bed, and immediately the light gray walls seem to be closing in on me. I hate this house. I shouldn't, but I do. I hate the way I feel inside it, like I can't breathe without being scolded or corrected. I never realized how caged and controlled I had been my entire life until I had my first taste of freedom with Hardin. I love having pizza for dinner, spending the entire day naked in bed with him. No folded napkins, no curled hair, no hideous yellow curtains. Before I can stop myself, I'm calling him, and he's answering on the second ring.
Tess?
He says out of breath. Hey, I whisper.
What's wrong?
He huffs. Nothing. Are you all right? Come on, Scott, get back over here, a female voice says in the background. My heart starts hammering against my ribcage as the possibilities flood my mind. Oh, you're... I'll let you go.
No, it's fine. She can wait.
The background noise gets softer and softer by the second. He must be walking away from whoever she is. Really, it's okay. I'll just go. I don't want to... interrupt you. Looking at the gray wall nearest my bed, I swear it's crept closer to me, like it's ready to pounce.
Okay.
He breathes. What? Okay, bye, I say quickly, and hang up, holding my hand over my mouth to keep from vomiting on my mother's carpet. There has to be some sort of logical... My phone buzzes next to my thigh, Hardin's name clear on the small screen. I answer despite myself.
I'm not doing what you think I'm doing. I didn't even realize how it sounded,
he immediately states. I can hear a harsh wind blowing around him, muffling his voice. It's okay, really.
No, Tess, it wouldn't be,
he says, calling me out.
If I was with someone else right now, that wouldn't be okay, so stop acting like it would be.
I lie back on the bed, admitting to myself that he's right. I didn't think you were doing anything, I half lie. I somehow knew he wasn't, but my imagination, it took me there still.
Good. Maybe you finally trust me.
Maybe.
Which would be more relevant if you hadn't left me.
His tone is sharp. Hardin. He sighs.
Why did you call? Is your mum being a bitch?
No, don't call her that. I roll my eyes. Well, she kind of is being one, but it's nothing big. I'm just... I don't know why I called, really.
Well?
He pauses and I hear a car door shut.
Do you want to talk or something?
Is that okay? Can we? I ask him. Only hours ago I was telling him that I needed to be more independent, yet here I am, calling him the moment I'm upset.
Sure.
Where are you anyway? I need to keep the conversation as neutral as possible. Not that it's ever possible to keep things between Hardin and me neutral.
A gym.
I almost laugh.
A gym?
You don't go to the gym. Hardin is one of the few people to be blessed with an incredible body without ever having to work out. His naturally large build is perfect, tall with broad shoulders, even though he claims that he was lanky and thin as a young teenager. His muscles are hard, but not too defined. His body is the perfect mixture of soft and hard.
I know. She was kicking my ass. I was genuinely embarrassed.
Who? I say a little forcefully. Calm down, Tessa. It's obviously the woman whose voice you heard.
Oh, the trainer. I decided to use that kickboxing shit you got me for my birthday.
Really? The thought of Hardin kickboxing makes me think about things that I shouldn't be thinking about, like him sweating.
Yeah,
he says a little shyly. I shake my head to try to cast out the image of him shirtless. How was it?
Okay, I guess. I prefer a different type of exercise. But on the plus side, I'm a lot less tense than I was a few hours ago.
I narrow my eyes at his response, even though he can't see me. My fingers trace the flower print fabric of the comforter. Do you think you'll go again? I finally feel like I can breathe as Hardin begins to tell me about how awkward the first half hour of his session was, how he kept cursing at the woman until she slapped him across the back of the head repeatedly, which in turn made him respect her and stop being such a jerk to her. Wait, I finally speak. Are you still there?
No, I'm home now.
You just left? Did you tell her?
No, why would I?
He asks, as if people acted like him all the time. I like the idea that he dropped what he was doing just to talk to me on the phone. I shouldn't, but I do, which warms me but also makes me sigh and say, we aren't doing a very good job on this space thing.
We never do.
I can picture his smirk even though he's speaking from more than 100 miles away. I know, but...
This is our version of space. You didn't get in the car and drive here. You only called.
I guess so. I allow myself to agree with his twisted logic. In a way, though, he's right. I don't know yet if it's a good or a bad thing.
Is Noah still there?
No, he left hours ago.
Good.
I'm looking at the darkness, beyond the ugly curtains of my room, when Hardin laughs and says,
Talking on the phone is so fucking weird.
Why? I ask.
I don't know. We've been talking for over an hour.
I pull my phone from my ear to check the time, and sure enough, he's right. It doesn't seem that long, I say.
I know. I never talk to anyone on the phone, except when you call me to bother me about bringing something home, or a few calls to my friends, but they never last longer than, like, 2 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, why would I? I was never into the teenage dating shit. All my friends used to spend hours on the phone listening to their girlfriends go on about nail polish or whatever the fuck girls talk about for hours on end.
He laughs slightly, and I frown a little at the reminder that Hardin never got the chance to be a normal teenager. You didn't miss out on much, I assure him.
Who did you used to talk to for hours? Noah?
Spitefulness is clear in his question. No, I never did the talking for hours thing either. I was busy shoving my nose into novels. Perhaps I was never a true teenager either.
Well, I'm glad you were a nerd then,
he says, making my stomach flutter. Teresa? I'm snapped back into reality as my mother repeatedly calls for me.
Oh, is it past your bedtime?
Hardin teases. Our relationship, non-relationship, giving each other space but talking on the phone thing has become even more confusing within the last hour. Shut up, I respond, and cover the receiver long enough to tell my mother I'll be right out. I need to see what she wants.
You're really going tomorrow?
Yeah, I am. After a moment of silence, he says,
Okay, well, be safe, I guess.
I can call you in the morning? My voice is shaky as I offer.
No, we probably shouldn't do this again,
he says, and my chest tightens.
Well, not often, anyway. It doesn't make sense to talk all the time if we aren't going to be together.
Okay. My response sounds small, defeated.
Good night, Tessa,
he says, and then the line goes dead. He's right. I know he is. But knowing that doesn't make it hurt any less. I shouldn't even have called him in the first place. Chapter 69. Tessa. It's 15 minutes until 5 o'clock in the morning, and for once, my mother isn't dressed for going out. She's wearing a silk pajama suit and has her robe wrapped around her, matching slippers covering her feet. My hair is still damp from my shower, but I've taken the time to apply some makeup and decent clothing. My mother studies me.
You have everything you need, correct?
Yes, everything I have is in my car, I say.
Okay. Be sure to get gas before you leave town.
I'll be fine, Mother.
I know. I'm only trying to help.
I know you are. I open my arms to hug her goodbye, and when she gives me a stiff little embrace, I pull back and decide to pour myself a cup of coffee for the road. That small, silly hope still nags at me. The foolish part of me that wishes so badly that headlights will appear in the darkness. Hardin will climb out of the car, bags in hand, and tell me that he's ready to go to Seattle with me. But that foolish part of me is just that. Foolish. At 5:10, I give my mother one last hug and climb into the car, which, fortunately, I had the foresight to warm up with the heater on. Kimberly and Christian's address is programmed into the GPS on my phone. It keeps closing down and recalculating, and I haven't even left the driveway. I really do need a new phone. If Hardin were here, he'd remind me repeatedly that this is another reason to get an iPhone. But Hardin's not here. The drive is long. I'm just at the beginning of my adventure, and already a thick cloud of unease is forming within me. Each small town that I pass makes me feel more and more out of place, and I wonder if Seattle will feel even worse. Will I settle in there, or will I run back to the main WCU campus, or even to my mother's place? When I check the clock on my dashboard, I see it's only been an hour, although, as I think about it, the hour did pass pretty quickly, which, in an odd way, makes my mind begin to feel lighter. When I look again, 20 minutes have passed in a blink. The farther I get from everything, the lighter my mind feels. I'm not controlled by panicked thoughts as I drive down the dark and unfamiliar roads. I focus on my future, the future that no one can take from me, that no one can make me give up. I stop frequently for coffee, snacks, and just to breathe in the morning air. When the sun finally comes up halfway through my drive, I focus on the bright yellow and orange light it casts and the way the colors blend together, making a beautiful, bright new beginning to the day. My mood lightens with the sky, and I find myself singing along to Taylor Swift and tapping my fingers on the steering wheel as she talks about trouble walking in, and I laugh at the irony of the lyrics. As I pass the sign welcoming me to the city of Seattle, my stomach fills with butterflies, the good kind. I'm doing this. Teresa Young is now officially in Seattle, making a life for herself at an age when most of her friends are still trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives. I did it. I didn't repeat my mother's mistakes and rely on other people to carve my future for me. I had help, obviously, and I'm grateful for it. But it's up to me now to take it all to the next level. I have an amazing internship, a sassy friend and her loving fiancé, and a car full of my belongings. I don't have an apartment. I don't have anything except my books, the few boxes in my back seat, and my job. But it will work out. It will. It has to. I will be happy in Seattle. It'll be just like I had always imagined it to be. It will. Every single mile drags on and on. Every second is filled with memories, goodbyes, and doubts. Kimberly and Christian's house is even larger than I had expected from Kimberly's description. I'm nervous and intimidated by the driveway alone. Trees line the property. The hedges around the house are well manicured, and the air smells of some flower I don't quite recognize. I park behind Kimberly's car and take a deep breath before climbing out. The large wooden door is crested with a large V, and I'm giggling at the arrogance of such a decoration when Kimberly opens the door. She raises her eyebrow to me and follows my eyes to the door she's just opened. We didn't put that there, I swear. The last family that lived here was named Vermin. I didn't say anything, I inform her with a shrug. I know what you're thinking. It's hideous. Christian is a proud man, but even he wouldn't do such a thing. She taps the letter with her red fingernail, and I laugh again as she ushers me inside. How was the drive? Come in, come in. It's cold out there. I follow her into the foyer and welcome the warm air and sweet smell of a fireplace. It was okay. Long, I tell her. I hope I never have to make that drive again. She scrunches up her nose. Christian's at the office. I took the day off to make sure you get settled in. Smith will be home from school in a few hours. Thank you again for letting me stay. I promise I won't be here longer than 2 weeks. Don't stress yourself. You're finally in Seattle. She beams, and at last it hits me. I am in Seattle.
Chapter 70. Harden.
How was the kickboxing yesterday?
Landon asks, his voice strained, his face contorted into a stupid-looking expression of physical effort as he lifts yet another bag of mulch. When he drops it into place, he puts his hands on his hips and says with a dramatic eye roll,
You could help, you know.
I know, I say from the chair I'm sitting on, and prop my feet up on one of the wooden shelves inside Karen's greenhouse. Kickboxing was okay. The trainer was a woman, so that was fucking lame.
Why?
Because she kicked your butt? You mean my ass? And no, she did not.
What made you go anyway? I told Tess not to buy you that pass to the gym because you wouldn't use it.
Annoyance flares in my chest at the way he called her Tess. I don't like it one fucking bit. It's only Landon, I remind myself. Of all the shit I have to worry about right now, Landon is the least of my concerns. Because I was enraged, and I felt like I was going to break everything in that goddamned apartment. So when I noticed the voucher as I was pulling out all of the drawers in the dresser, I grabbed it, put my shoes on, and took off.
You pulled out all the drawers.
Tessa's going to kill you. He shakes his head and finally takes a seat on the stack of mulch bags. I don't know why he agreed to help his mum move all this shit around anyway. She won't see it. It's not her place anymore. I remind him, trying to keep the edge out of my voice. He looks at me guiltily.
Sorry.
Yeah, I sigh. I don't even have a witty comeback.
It's hard for me to feel bad for you when you could be there with her.
Landon says after a few beats of silence.
Fuck you.
I lean my head back against the wall, and I can feel him staring at me.
It doesn't make sense,
he adds. Not to you.
Or her. Or anyone.
I don't have to explain myself to anyone. I snap.
Then why are you even here?
Instead of answering him, I look around the greenhouse, unsure of what I'm doing in this place myself. I don't have anywhere else to go. Does he think that I don't miss her every fucking second? That I wouldn't much rather be with her than standing here talking to him? He gives me a sideways look.
What about your friends?
You mean the one who fucking drugged Tessa? Or the other one who set me up in order to tell her about the bet? I start counting them on my fingers to add to the dramatic effect.
Or you could mean the one who is constantly trying to get into her pants.
Shall I go on?
Guess not. Though I could have told you that your friends sucked,
he says in an annoying tone.
So what are you going to do?
Deciding that keeping the peace is better than murdering him, I just shrug. Exactly what I'm doing now.
So you're going to hang out with me and mope around?
I'm not moping. I'm doing what you told me to do and bettering myself, I mock, using air quotes. Have you talked to her since she left? I ask.
Yeah. She texted me this morning to tell me she arrived.
She's at Vance's, isn't she?
Why don't you find out for yourself?
Fuck. Landon is annoying. I know she is. Where else would she be?
With that Trevor guy?
Landon is quick to suggest, and his smirk makes me reconsider the stay of execution I'd just granted him. If I tackled him, it wouldn't hurt much. He's only about 3 feet off the ground anyway. It probably wouldn't even leave a bruise. I forgot about fucking Trevor, I groan, rubbing harshly at my temples. Trevor is almost as infuriating as Zed. Only I believe that Trevor does actually have good intentions when it comes to Tessa, which only upsets me even more. It makes him more dangerous.
So, what's next in Project Self-Improvement?
Landon smiles, but it fades quickly and his expression turns serious.
I'm really proud of you for doing this, you know. It's nice to see you actually trying for once, instead of making an effort for an hour, then going back to the way you were the moment she forgives you. It'll mean a lot to her to see you really following through on these changes.
I drop my feet and rock in the chair slightly. Talking like this is stirring something up in me. Don't try to lecture me. I haven't done shit yet. It's only been a day. A long, miserable, lonely day. Landon's eyes go wide in sympathy.
No, I'm serious. You didn't turn to alcohol, and you haven't gotten into a fight. You haven't been arrested, and I know you came to talk to your dad.
My mouth drops open.
He told you? That fucker. No, he didn't tell me. I live here, and I saw your car.
Oh.
I think you talking to him really would mean a lot to Tessa,
he continues.
Would you just stop?
I say, imploring him with a quick hunch of my shoulders.
Fuck! You're not my shrink. Stop acting like you're better than me and I'm some damaged fucking animal that you need to... Why can't you just graciously accept a compliment?
Landon says over me.
I never said I was better than you. All I'm trying to do is be there for you as a friend. You don't have anyone. You said it yourself. And now that you let Tessa move to Seattle, you don't have a single person to give you moral support.
He stares at me, but I look away.
You have to stop pushing people away, Harden. I know you don't like me. You hate me because you think I'm somewhat responsible for some of the issues you have with your dad. But I care deeply for Tessa and you, whether you want to hear that or not.
I don't want to hear it. I fire back at him.
Why does he always have to say shit like this? I came here to, I don't know, talk to him. Not to talk to him. Not to have him tell me how much he cares about me. And why would he care about me anyway?
I've been nothing but an asshole to him since the day I met him. But I don't hate him. Does he really think that I do?
Well, that's one of those things you need to work on.
He stands to his feet and walks out of the greenhouse, leaving me alone.
Fuck!
I kick my foot out in front of me, and it collides with the wooden shelving unit. A crack sounds through the room, and I jump to my feet.
No, no, no!
I try to catch the flower boxes, clay pots, and random shit before they crash to the floor. Within seconds, all of it, the pieces of all of it, is on the floor.
This isn't fucking happening. I didn't even mean to break this shit, and here I am with a pile of dirt, flowers, and cracked pots at my feet. Maybe I can clean some of this shit up before Karen... Oh my!
I hear her gasp, and I turn to the doorway to see her standing there, a little trowel in her hand.
Fuck! I didn't mean to knock them down, I swear! I kicked my foot out and accidentally broke the shelf, and all the shit started falling down and I tried to catch it!
I frantically explain as Karen rushes over to a pile of broken pottery. Her hands sift through the rubble, trying to piece together a blue flower pot that has no chance of ever becoming one again. She doesn't say anything, but I hear her sniffle, and she lifts her arm to wipe her cheeks with her dirt-covered hands. After a few seconds, she says,
I've had this pot since I was a little girl. It was the first pot I ever used for transplanting a cutling.
I don't know what to say to her. all of the shit I've broken. This time it truly was an accident. I feel like complete shit.
This and my china were the only things of my grandmother's that I had left.
She cries. The china. The china that I smashed into a million pieces.
Karen, I'm sorry. It's okay, Harden.
She sighs, tossing the pieces of the flower pots back into the pile of dirt. But it's not okay. I can see it in her brown eyes. I can see how hurt she is, and I'm surprised by the heaviness of the guilt I feel pressing on my chest at the sight of the sadness in her eyes. She stares at the shattered pot for a few more seconds, and I watch her silently. I try to imagine Karen as a young girl, big brown eyes and a kind soul even at that point. I bet she was one of those girls who was nice to everyone, even the assholes like me. I think about her grandmother, probably nice like her, giving her something that Karen felt was important enough to keep safe all these years. I've never had anything in my life that wasn't destroyed.
I'm going to finish dinner. It'll be ready soon, she says at last.
Then, with a wipe of her eyes, she leaves the greenhouse the same way her son left only minutes ago.
Chapter 71, Tessa. There's no denying Smith and his adorable little way of walking around, looking at things, greeting you with a formal handshake, and then drilling you with questions as you try to do chores. So when I'm putting away my clothes and he waddles in and asks me in a quiet voice, "Where's your Harden?" I can't really be upset. It makes me a bit sad to have to say that I left him back at WCU, but the cuteness of this little kid eases some of that pain. "And where's WCU?" he asks. I do my best to smile. It's a long way away. Smith bats his beautiful green eyes. "Is he coming?" I don't think so. You like Harden, don't you, Smith? I laugh and push the sleeves of my old maroon dress over a hanger and place it inside the closet. "Sort of. He's funny." "Hey, I'm funny too," I tease, but he only smiles a shy smile. "Not really," he answers bluntly, which only makes me laugh harder. "Harden thinks that I'm funny," I lie. "He does?" Smith follows my actions and begins to help me unpack and refold my clothes. "Yes, he won't admit it, though." "Why?" "I don't know," I shrug. "Probably because I'm not very funny, and when I try to be funny, it's even worse." "Well, tell your Harden to come here and live, like you," he says very matter-of-factly, like a little king issuing an edict. My chest tightens at the sweet little boy's words. "I'll tell him." "You don't have to fold those," I tell him, reaching for a blue shirt in his small hands. "I like to fold." He hides the shirt back behind him, and what can I do but nod? "You'll make a good husband one day," I tell him, and smile. His dimples show when he smiles back. At least he seems to like me a little more than he did before. "I don't want to be husband," he says, scrunching up his nose, and I roll my eyes at this 5-year-old who speaks exactly like a grown man. "You'll change your mind one day," I tease. "Nope." And with that, he ends the conversation, and we finish with my clothes in silence. My first day in Seattle is coming to a close, and tomorrow will be my first day at the new office. I'm extremely nervous and anxious about it. I don't care for new things. In fact, they terrify me. I like to be in control of every situation and enter new environments with a solid plan. I haven't had time to plan much about this move, save enrolling into my new classes, and honestly, I'm not looking forward to them as much as I should be. Somewhere in the middle of my scolding myself, Smith has disappeared, leaving a perfectly folded pile of clothing on the bed. I need to get out and see Seattle tomorrow after work. I need to be reminded of what I loved so much about this city, because right now, in this strange bedroom, hours away from everything I've ever known, it just feels so lonely.
Chapter 72. Harden. I watch Logan down the entire pint of beer, foamy head and all, put the glass on the table and wipe his mouth.
"Steph's a psycho. No one knew she was going to do that to Tessa," he says, and then burps.
Dan knew. And if I find out that anyone else did, I warn him. He looks at me solemnly and nods. No one else knew. Well, not that I know of. But you know, no one tells me shit anyway. A tall brunette appears at his side, and he slides his arm around her. Nate and Chelsea will be here soon, he says to her. A couple's night, I groan. Time for me to go. I move to stand, but Logan stops me. It's not a couple's night. Tristan is single now, and Nate isn't dating Chelsea. They're just fucking. I don't know why I came here anyway, but Landon would barely speak to me, and Karen looked so sad at dinner I just couldn't sit there at the table any longer. Let me guess, Zed will be here too? Logan shakes his head. I don't think so. I think he was even more pissed than you about the shit that went down, because he hasn't spoken to any of us since then. No one is more pissed than me, I say through my teeth. Hanging out with my old friends isn't helping me better myself. It's only making me annoyed. How dare anyone say that Zed cares more about Tessa than I do? Logan waves his hand in the air. I didn't mean it like that. My bad. Have a beer and chill out. He looks around for the bartender. I look over and see that Nate, she who must be Chelsea, and Tristan are walking across the floor of the small bar toward us. I don't want a fucking beer, I say quietly, trying to control my attitude. Logan is only trying to help, but he's annoying me. Everyone is annoying me. Everything is annoying me. Tristan smacks me on the shoulder. Long time no see. He tries to joke, but it's only awkward, and neither of us even cracks a smile. I'm sorry about the shit that Steph did. I had no idea what she was up to. Honest, he finally says, making it even more awkward. I don't want to talk about it, I say forcefully, closing the conversation. While the small group of my friends drinks and talks about shit that I give absolutely no fuck about, I find myself thinking about Tessa. What is she doing right now? Does she like Seattle? Does she feel as uncomfortable at Vance's house as I suspect she does? Are Christian and Kimberly being nice to her? Of course they are. Kimberly and Christian are always nice. So really, I'm just avoiding the big question. Does Tessa miss me the way I miss her?
Are you going to have one?
Nate interrupts my thoughts and waves a shot glass in front of my face. No, I'm good. I gesture to my soda on the table, and he shrugs before tipping his head back to take the shot. This is the last thing I want to be doing right now. This adolescent drinking until they throw up or black out shit may be good enough for them, but it's not for me. They haven't had the luxury of having someone's voice nagging in the back of their mind, telling them to be better, to do more with their lives. They haven't had anyone love them enough to make them want to be better. I want to be good for you, Tess, I once told her. What a great job I've done so far. I'm going, I announce, but no one even notices as I stand from my seat and leave. I've made up my mind that I will no longer waste my time hanging out at bars with people who really don't give a shit about me. I have nothing against most of them, but in all actuality, none of them really know me or care enough to. They only liked the drunk, rowdy, fucking random girls me. I was only another prop at one of their massive parties. They don't know shit about me. They don't even know that my father is the fucking chancellor at our college. I'm sure they don't know what a chancellor does either. No one knows me the way she does. No one has ever even cared to get to know me the way Tessa does. She always asks the most intrusive and random questions. What are you thinking? Why do you like that show? What do you think that man across the room is thinking right now? What is your first memory? I always acted as if her need to know everything was obnoxious. But really, it made me feel special. Or like someone cared about me enough to want to know the answers to these ridiculous questions. I don't know why my mind won't connect with itself. One half is telling me to get over myself and take my pathetic ass to Seattle, knock down Vance's door, and promise to never let her leave again. It's not that easy, though. There's a bigger, stronger, other part of me, the half that always wins, telling me how fucked up I am. I'm so fucked up, and all I do is ruin every fucking thing in my life and everyone else's. So I would be doing Tessa a favor by leaving her alone. That's the only side I can believe, especially without her here to tell me that I'm wrong, especially since it's always proven to be true in the past. Landon's plan for me to become a better person sounds good on paper, but then what? I'm supposed to believe that I can actually stay that way forever. I'm supposed to believe that I'll be good enough for her just because I decide not to down a bottle of vodka when I got mad. This would be so much easier if I wasn't willing to admit how much of a fuck-up I am. I don't know what I'm going to do, but the question's not going to be settled right now. For tonight, I'm going to go inside my apartment and watch Tessa's favorite television shows, the worst shows, which are full of ridiculous plot lines and horrible acting. I'll probably even pretend that she's there explaining every scene to me, even though I'm watching it right next to her, and I clearly understand what is going on. I love when she does that. It's annoying, but I love how passionate she is about the smallest details, like who is wearing a red coat and harassing those obnoxious, pretty little lying girls. As I step off of the elevator, I continue to plan my night. I'll end up watching that shit, then eating, take a shower, probably get myself off while picturing Tessa's mouth around me, and I'll do my best not to do anything stupid. Maybe I'll clean up the mess I made yesterday even. I stop in front of my apartment door and look back down the hall. Why the fuck is the door cracked open? Is Tessa back, or did someone break in again? I'm not sure which answer would make me angrier. Tessa? I push the door open with my foot, and my stomach drops to the floor at the sight of her father slumped over, covered in blood. What the fuck? I shout and slam the door closed.
Watch out!
Richard groans. My eyes follow his to the hallway, where, over his shoulder, I catch sight of something moving. A man's there, hovering over him. I square my shoulders and I'm ready to charge if need be. But then I realize it's Richard's friend. Chad, I think his name is.
What the hell happened to him, and why the fuck are you here?
I ask him.
I was hoping to see the girl, but you'll do.
He sneers. My blood boils at the way this vile man refers to my Tessa.
Get the fuck out and take him with you!
I gesture to the piece of shit that brought this man to my apartment. His blood is making a mess on my floor. Chad rolls his shoulders and twists his head back and forth. I can tell he's trying to be calm, but is feeling agitated.
The problem with that is he owes me a lot of money, and he doesn't have a way to pay it,
he says, his dirty fingernails scratching at the small red dots on his arms. Fucking junkie. I hold up a flat hand.
Not my fucking problem. I'm not going to tell you again to leave, and I'm sure as hell not giving you any money.
But Chad only smirks.
You don't know who you're talking to, kid.
He kicks Richard just below his ribcage. A pathetic whine falls from Richard's lips as he slides down onto the floor and doesn't get up. I am not in the mood to deal with fucking drug addicts breaking into my apartment.
I don't give a fuck about you or him. You're sadly mistaken if you think I'm afraid of you.
I growl. What the fuck else could possibly happen this week? No, wait. I don't want to know the answer to that. I step toward Chad, and he backs away, just like I knew he would. Maybe to be nice, I will say it once more.
Get out, or I'll call the cops.
And while we wait for them to show up and save you,
I'll be beating the shit out of you with the baseball bat I keep handy, in case some dumb fuck tries to pull shit like this.
I move toward the hall closet and grab the weapon from where it leans against the wall, lifting it slowly to prove my point.
If I leave without the money he owes me, whatever I do to him is on you. His blood will be on your hands.
I don't give a fuck what you do to him,
I say. But then I'm suddenly unsure of whether I actually mean that.
Sure,
he says, and looks around the living room.
How fucking much money?
I say.
500.
I'm not giving you $500.
I know how Tessa will feel when she learns that my suspicions about her father being an addict are true. And this makes me want to throw the wallet in Chad's face and give him everything I have just to get rid of him. I hate knowing that I was right about her father. At this point, she only half believes me, but soon she's going to have to realize the whole truth. I just wish this would all go away, Dick included.
I don't have that kind of cash on me.
200?
He asks. I can practically see his addiction begging me through his eyes.
Fine!
I can't believe I'm actually giving money to this junkie who has broken into my apartment and beaten Tess's dad to a pulp. I don't even have 200 in cash. What am I supposed to do? Take the creep with me to the ATM? This is such fucking bullshit. Who the fuck comes home to this shit? Me. That's fucking who. For her. Only for her. I pull my wallet from my pocket and toss the $80 I just pulled from the bank at him and walk into the bedroom, bat still in hand. I grab the watch my father and Karen bought me for Christmas and throw it at him. For such a skeletal wreck of a human, Chad snatches it out of the air pretty deftly. He must really want it, or what he can trade it for.
That watch is worth more than 500. Now get the fuck out,
I say. But I don't want him to leave, really. I want him to try to come at me so I can bust his head open. Chad laughs, then coughs, then laughs again.
Until next time, Rick,
he threatens, and walks out the door. I follow him and point the bat at him, saying,
And Chad, if I see you again, I will kill you.
Then I slam the door on his ugly face. Chapter 73. Harden. I nudge Richard's thigh with my boot. I'm beyond mad, and this whole mess is his damn fault.
I'm sorry,
he groans, attempting to lift himself up from the floor. Within seconds, he winces and slides back onto the hardwood. The last thing I want to do is lift his pathetic ass up off of the floor. But at this point, I'm not sure what else to do with him.
I'll put you in the chair, but you aren't sitting on my couch, not until you take a shower.
Okay,
he mutters, and closes his eyes as I bend down to lift him. He's not as heavy as I expected him to be, especially for his height. I drag him over to a kitchen chair, and as soon as I sit him down, he bends over, wrapping his arms around his torso.
What now? What am I supposed to do with you now?
I ask him. Quietly. What would Tessa do if she was here? Knowing her, she'd run him a hot bath and make him something to eat. I'm not doing either of those things.
Take me back, he suggests.
His shaky fingers lift the neckline of his torn T-shirt, something of mine that Tessa let him keep. Has he been wearing it since he left here? He wipes the blood from his mouth, lazily smearing it down his chin and into the mess of thick hair there.
Back where?
I say. Maybe I should have called the police when I first entered the apartment. Maybe I shouldn't have given Chad that watch. I wasn't thinking properly at the time. All I could think about was keeping Tessa out of this. But of course she's completely out of it already. She's so far away.
Why did you bring him here?
If Tessa had been here...
My voice trails off.
She moved out,
I knew she wouldn't be here,
he strains to say. I know it's hard for him to speak, but I need answers and my patience is running thin. Did you come here a few days ago, too?
I did. I only came to eat and shower.
Richard pants. You came all the way here just to eat and shower?
Yeah. I took the bus the first time, but Chad...
He takes a breath and howls in pain before shifting his weight.
He offered to bring me here, but then he turned on me as soon as we got inside.
How the fuck did you get in?
I took Tessie's spare key.
He took it, or she gave it to him, I wonder. He nods toward the sink.
From the drawer.
So let me get this straight. You stole a key to my apartment and thought you could just come here whenever the hell you wanted to take a shower. Then you bring Chad, the charming junkie, to my house, and he beats your ass in my living room because you owe him money. How did I end up in the middle of an episode of Intervention?
No one was home. I didn't think it mattered.
You didn't think? That's the problem. What if Tessa had been the one to come here? Do you even care how she'd feel if she saw you like this? I'm completely out of my element here. My first instinct is to drag this old fool out of my apartment and leave him bleeding in the hallway. I can't do that, though, because I happen to be desperately in love with his daughter, and by doing it, all I'd accomplish would be to hurt her even more than I already have. Isn't love just fucking awesome? Well, what should we do now? I scratch at my chin. Should I take you to a hospital?
I don't need a hospital. Just a bandage or two. Can you call Tessie for me and tell her I'm sorry?
I dismiss his suggestion with a sweep of the arm. No, I will not. She isn't going to know about this. I don't want her worrying about this shit.
Okay.
He agrees and shifts on the chair again. How long have you been using? I ask him. He swallows.
I don't,
he says meekly. Don't lie to me. I'm not a fucking idiot. Just tell me. He looks deep in thought, distracted.
About a year. But I've been trying so hard to stop since the day I ran into Tessie.
She's going to be heartbroken. You know that, don't you? I hope he does, and I certainly have no problem reminding him multiple times if he ever happens to forget.
I know. I'm going to get better for her, he claims.
Aren't we all? Well, you may want to hurry your rehabilitation along, because if she saw you now... I don't finish the sentence. I'm debating whether or not to call her and ask her what the hell I'm supposed to do with her dad. But I know that's not the answer. She doesn't need to be bothered with this. Not right now. Not while she's trying to turn her dreams into reality. I'm going to my room. Feel free to take a shower, eat, or whatever you were planning on doing before I came home and interrupted you. I saunter out of the kitchen and into the bedroom. I close the door behind me and lean against it. This has been the longest 24 hours of my life.
Chapter 74, Tessa. I can't keep the ridiculous grin off of my face as Kimberly and Christian show me my new office. The walls are a clean white, the trim and door are dark gray, and the desk and bookcases are black, sleek, and modern. The size of the room is the same as my first office, but the view here is incredible. Breathtaking, really. The new Vance Publishing office is located in the center of downtown Seattle. The city below is thriving, constantly moving, constantly developing, and here I am, right in the center of it all. This is amazing! Thank you so much, I say, with probably more enthusiasm than most people would consider to be professional.
Everything you need is within walking distance. Coffee, any cuisine you could possibly crave, it's all here.
Christian proudly stares down at the city and wraps his arm around his fiancée's waist. Stop bragging, would you? K Kimberly teases, and he plants a soft kiss to her forehead.
Well, we'll leave you be. Now get to work.
Christian playfully scolds me,